You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, June 6, 2018.
Put a one-year moratorium in the midst of the worst opioid, the worst drug epidemic ever in the history of the world. An hour away from here, Scott County, the worst HIV epidemic in the history of our country. We're in the middle of a hepatitis C epidemic.
In today's feature report, we hear an interview from the Indiana Recovery Alliance's Chris Abert about the City of Bloomington's push to ban new addiction treatment facilities from opening over the next year. That's coming up later in the program.
Also coming up in the next half hour, cybercrime is the new bank robbing, and your wallet is the bank. What to look for on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
Indiana Republicans will meet for their state convention in Evansville this weekend. As WFHB correspondent Francis Sheets reports, Republicans are considering changes to their party platform, including taking out language that defines marriage as between a man and a woman.
Republicans are debating changes in their party stance this week, including specific language about marriage and families. But the proposal is facing serious backlash from conservatives within the state party. The director of the Conservative Christian American Family Association of Indiana, Micah Clark, says the proposed language is a, quote, weak statement of pure mush, unquote. The American Family Association derides the debate over marriage and family in the party platform for its attempt at inclusivity. Clark, along with Indiana House Speaker Brian Bosma and other key Indiana conservatives, is arguing that the party should not betray value voters, especially in Vice President Mike Pence's home state. Other Indiana Republican Party members argue that the language helps broaden the party base. Megan Robertson is a political consultant and is one of the Republicans pushing to remove the man and woman definition from the Indiana Republican Party. Robertson has been active in Republican politics for over a decade and managed the Freedom Indiana campaign to stop a constitutional ban on gay marriage. She is also gay and says that the new language is an improvement to the party platform. According to the Fort Wayne newspaper, the Journal-Gazette, Clark leaked the proposed changes to the Republican Party platform's definition of marriage. In response, Robertson stated, quote, "It is not the Republican Party's place to define what a strong family looks like," unquote. The newly proposed language states, quote, "We believe that strong families are the foundation of society and that such families bring forth citizens capable of self-government as well as properly motivated public servants, so essential for a successful republic. We support the traditional families with a mother and father, blended families, grandparents, guardians, single parents, and all living adults who successfully raise and nurture children to reach their full potential every day," unquote. Any chance for an amendment to the wording will likely come at the 2018 Indiana Republican State Convention in Evansville this Saturday. For WFHB, I'm Frances Sheets.
The City of Bloomington announced its plans to pave and improve 20 miles of city-maintained streets in the coming months. The city's street department says that it intends to complete 19 paving projects throughout the city by October. The city allocated over $560,000 for asphalt for 2018. The 19 projects are intended to consume approximately 13,000 tons of asphalt. In a press release, Mayor John Hamilton said, quote, "The city is responsible for 235 miles of roadway, so each year we work to improve about 10% of the roadway as part of our pavement management plan," unquote. All construction activity is weather-dependent, and the schedule is subject to change. Listeners can view a complete list of city construction projects online at bloomington.in.gov.
Nighttime paving will begin on the southern portion of the I-69 construction zone tonight. Construction is expected to continue for the next 10 days, according to the Indiana Department of Transportation. Residents can expect intermittent closures of some ramps as the paving crews make final connections to Highway 37. Paving work is anticipated to begin in the south and move north. Affected interchanges include at Fullerton Pike, Tap Road, and 2nd and 3rd Street overpasses. Law enforcement will be on site to assist with traffic control, that's according to NDOT. Only one interchange at a time will be impacted by closures and construction.
New measures by the Consumer Financial Protections Bureau are looking to strip payday loan recipients of protections. WFHB correspondent Jonah Chester brings us this report.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is trying to delay implementing its own rules that would grant recipients of payday loans greater protections. The CFPB is looking to push the compliance date of the new rules back to August of next year. The rules would require lenders to assess a borrower's ability to repay their loan and still meet other financial obligations. It would also limit the number of loans a borrower can take out to 6 per year. Payday loans are temporary loans given out to recipients for a short period. They are designed to be paid back after the recipient receives their next paycheck. According to Aaron Macy, a policy analyst with the Indiana Institute for Working Families, that's rarely how things end up working out.
So payday lending often becomes a vicious cycle. The typical borrower takes 8 to 10 loans in a year. When this was really designed and intended to be a two-week product.
The payday loan industry has drawn criticism over the past several years due to high interest loan rates and predatory practices. According to the National Consumer Law Center, the average interest rates for the loans can range from 700% to 2,000% for a 14-day loan period. The average loan for the state of Indiana is $317, according to the Center for Responsible Lending, which researches the impact of predatory lending practices. A typical borrower will pay more than $400 in additional finance charges for a loan of that size. The CFPB's new rules would not have done anything to address the interest rates on payday loans, but according to Macy, it was a step in the right direction.
It's already not the strong protection that we had hoped for, and part of that was just because the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau wasn't allowed to touch the interest rate of payday loans, which is the part that many people find the most egregious. But it did try to limit that the debt treadmill that we see from payday lending, where it's not just a two-week borrowing cycle, but folks are repeating these very high-cost loans over and over again and ultimately paying more for the loan than they actually took out to borrow.
Macy says the payday loan industry in Indiana will remain unaffected until the new CFPB rules go into effect. That was scheduled to happen at the beginning of next year, but with the delay in implementing the rules, Macy says it's not certain when or even if they'll go into effect.
We're really disappointed that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is taking these steps. Their purpose, their mission, is to protect consumers. That's why this rule was created. And so to see them backing down from that is very disappointing.
The shelving of the rule came after former GOP Congressman Mick Mulvaney was appointed to temporarily lead the CFPB by President Trump. Mulvaney, who also serves as the director of the Federal Office of Management and Budget, has been an outspoken critic of the regulations. The rule is expected to be on pause until the CFPB can create a new proposal for payday loan regulations. For WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
Monroe County Commissioners approved the receipt of two community correction grants in their meeting this morning. A $1.3 million Department of Corrections grant will fund home detention, day reporting, and community transition programs. The grant also supports the county's drug treatment court, the mental health court, and reentry court. Linda Brady is Monroe County's chief probation officer. Brady told commissioners the grant amount has been largely frozen, and this year was an exception, though the county got a slight increase of $6,700 to cover salary benefits.
The DOC is hoping that the state legislature will fund community corrections to a greater degree into the future, but that remains to be seen with the next legislative session, which is a budget session.
The county also received a $36,000 grant to fund educational programming for juvenile offenders. The grant comes from the Annie E. Casey Foundation's Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative. Christine McAvee, Juvenile Detention Supervisor, says Monroe County has been involved with the initiative for 15 years. She says the grant supports education for court-involved juveniles age 16 or older.
The bulk of it, which is the $26,000, the programming piece, we are going to again partner with MCCSC and provide adult basic ed comprehensive services to our young people who are no longer enrolled in school and unlikely to attend or unlikely to graduate through a traditional means. These are kids that have not been successful in public school for a variety of reasons. Sometimes they're not eligible to go to the GED program that's currently available because of their expulsion status with MCCSC and the agreement with adult basic ed that expelled kids can't be on MCCSC property, which is Broadview. Also, the kids have not been successful in traditional school because of behavioral problems and gaps in education. So we found kind of this small classroom, more one-on-one work has reaped us tremendous benefits.
McAvee says the education program, which began last August, also helps students connect with employment opportunities through Work One. However, students begin the program with a wide range of deficiencies to overcome.
Just to kind of give you an example of what we're working with, we had one young man who enrolled who was at a zero grade level, which meant he wasn't even functioning at a kindergarten level. So, you know, these aren't kids who were 1 year out and just needed a little bit of push in the right direction. You know, again, they have tremendous gaps in programming, they have gaps in education, they've moved quite often, so sometimes it's just a matter of getting with them and getting their basic skills, kind of that foundation, and then working towards some of the acceleration. Every kid that we've had in the program within the first 3 months has achieved at least a 2-grade level improvement, which, talking to Mr. Moore, who is the director at Adult Basic Ed, is unprecedented.
While students often improve dramatically, McAvee says the program has had only one graduate so far. The next meeting of the Monroe County Commissioners is scheduled for June 13.
Two Monroe County lakes receive grants from the Indiana Department of Natural Resources to address invasive aquatic plants. Lake Lemon and Griffey Lake received a combined total of over $16,000 to help manage hostile and non-native plant species. The grants are a part of a wave of funding awarded by the DNR to 63 lakes across 15 different counties. The agency awarded nearly $660,000 through its Lake and River Enhancement, or LARE, program. LARE grants are funded by a fee paid by boat owners when they register their boats with the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. According to the DNR, the cleanup efforts will create more hospitable aquatic habitats for native fish and plant life by removing non-native species that can take over and clog lakes. The grants are expected to be used to help many lakes rid them of invasive species, such as Eurasian watermill foil, curl leaf pondweed, and starry stonewort. Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B-Line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner is available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, 922 South Morton Street. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. The City of Bloomington is attempting to pass a moratorium on new addictions treatment facilities. Communications Director Mary Catherine Carmichael says the move is an attempt to protect residents from predatory rehab facilities. But Indiana Recovery Alliance founder Chris Abert says the proposed moratorium is unnecessary and may cost lives. WFHB News Director Wes Martin interviews Abert today in today's feature report.
Chris Abert, you are the founder and director of the Indiana Recovery Alliance. What do you think about the City of Bloomington's push for this moratorium? Nothing's passed yet, but coming from the city, they're talking about this is a moratorium to try to protect people in our community from some of these predatory addiction treatment facilities. Specifically, Mary Catherine had mentioned South Beach, Florida, and Arizona as kind of case studies of that. And I'm just wondering, what do you or the Indiana Recovery Alliance think about the proposed moratorium?
So I think there's a couple different issues going on within that moratorium. One thing, and that was what you were talking about, is the Delray Beach or the Prescott model. The model is highly predatory. It uses basically headhunters and marketers to cycle people from halfway houses into treatment centers, and oftentimes will pay people exorbitant amounts of money, including, you know, people who are using drugs to purposefully relapse to be cycled through, and worse. And it's documented pretty well. So protecting ourselves against that type of treatment is absolutely necessary. And we can follow the lead of Delray. We can follow the lead of Prescott, who have passed similar moratoriums and then enacted legislation to make sure that those type of predatory treatment centers aren't able to continue in that practice. Unfortunately, this moratorium included medically assisted therapy within that.
And you're talking about the proposed moratorium that
right.
the city is offering.
Yeah, so this moratorium also targeted buprenorphine and methadone clinics. And our understanding is that the new methadone clinic won't be affected by this, and that it is just a moratorium from 6 months to a year. The problem with that is that we're in the height of the opioid epidemic, right? We've never seen fatal overdoses at these numbers. We're in the midst of a hepatitis C epidemic, possibility of an HIV outbreak. So to take away the most efficacious modality in this time, even for 6 months, right? So 6 months doesn't sound like that long. How many people might die, though, in that 6 months because they're denied access to that treatment? And I think another thing for listeners to know is that the previous treatment that we're talking about, that inpatient partial hospitalization treatment, that is barely regulated at all, right? So, you know, outside of just a few slight regulations, pretty much anyone can go in and start one of those type of outfits. To start a medically assisted therapy treatment is so incredibly regulated. I mean, we're talking about SAMHSA, we're talking about prescription oversight, INSPECT through the state of Indiana,
ISDH,
the Department of Mental Health, ISDH, the FDA, the DEA. So to think that those are somehow like predatory and that the city needs to have oversight over them when they're so highly regulated is misinformed.
So what is the difference there that you're talking about? Because addiction treatment, it could be, you know, somebody checking into rehab, right? To me or to a bystander. So what is really the difference between what you're talking about versus what the city is talking about?
So that's where I think it gets confusing, because they're talking about both as though they are somehow similarly related and both need oversight to protect from this kind of predator behavior that we're talking about. And in fact, we need to parse out that MAT is a very different modality than inpatient abstinent-based treatment. First of all, the first thing to know is that the inpatient abstinent-based treatment has a success rate of about 8%, right? So, and that's if you look at the metric of actual sustained abstinence and engagement, continued engagement in the program. That's across the board for most treatment modalities that are abstinent-based long-term, whether they're inpatient or IOP. Whereas if you look at other metrics, such as decrease in disease, decrease in fatal overdose, retention in the program, reduction in incarceration rates, then programs like methadone and buprenorphine really shine, right? So there's, again, 45 years of evidence for the efficacy of methadone. There's over 15 years of evidence for the efficacy of buprenorphine. So again, to even compare these is, to put it lightly, comparing apples and oranges, and they absolutely shouldn't be both included in any moratorium schemes. It's too critical right now. We're too critical of a point to suddenly put up artificial city-imposed barriers. So I'll say it one last time. There are already so many regulations on buprenorphine and methadone that we don't really have to worry about people becoming predators within those systems.
So this confusion, I guess, that's coming from at least City Hall in conflating inpatient and medically assisted. part of what at least Mary Catherine Carmichael had said is that this is a moratorium so that they can pull back and stop any of this development and study the issue for an extended period of time. It looks like the mayor's office is proposing a year, but it'll ultimately be up to city council to decide how long or if this moratorium goes forward. Does that seem like a reasonable...
So again, whether it was the civil rights movement or ACT UP in the 80s, we don't have time to wait. Right, we cannot put a one-year moratorium in the midst of the worst opioid, the worst drug epidemic ever in the history of the world. You know, an hour away from here, Scott County, the worst HIV epidemic in the history of our country. We're in the middle of a hepatitis C epidemic. The entire country is overwhelmed by mass incarceration. So we absolutely don't have a year. We don't have 6 months. We don't have 30 days for this type of moratorium against MAT. Again, I'm going to offer a little bit of grace and assume good intentions and just say that this was a misinformed, well-intentioned effort that will end up, if enacted, first of all, I mean, we would put all our efforts into fighting it continuously, as we've already started to do. And second of all, it would have immediate, terrible consequences for the people that it was purported to help. So this brings me to probably the reason the IRA exists in the first place. We believe that it's essential to have the people most affected and people working the front lines sitting at tables when policies are being designed like this, right? So this is exactly the type of situation where having somebody who understood MAT, who is in the forefront of the opioid fight right now, you know, helping to inform policymakers of unintended consequences of some of their proposed legislation and ordinances. And we believe that from the federal government, to the state government, to the county government, to the city government, to local trustees even, right? So we just want to make sure that when people are formulating these ideas on how to best help, have people in the room that are actually on the front lines helping those folks. Best scenario is that you have people who are actually using drugs, so you can find out, what is it that you actually need? You know, what are you scared of? What have been your experiences with these different types of treatments? And don't just rest on those anecdotes, because, and overarching, we have tons of data that can show us what is the best path to move forward.
And where would it be possible for somebody to grab data like this? I mean, is that generally available to the public?
Or? It's so easy to find. You just have to know what you're looking for. So I think the saying is, I don't know what I don't know until I realize I didn't know it, something like that. And I think this is an instance of that. That we sent a letter to the city and to the council, to the mayor's office, informing them of, again, the efficacy of MAT. But yeah, the information is, you just Google, you know, MAT outcomes, or Google, you know, Google the Florida model for treatment centers, and you can find out what the actual concern is here.
Anything else that you want to add, either with regards to this proposed moratorium or about addiction treatment in general?
Well, I want to say that the city was quick to reach out. So we also talked to Mary Catherine and Isabel Piedmont reached out. And so we spoke with the mayor's office, and they seemed very receptive to changing the language within the moratorium, or at least discussing that. And then we hope to meet with council members over the weekend to help guide these policies. So again, I honestly believe that everybody wants to protect our most vulnerable community members, and that if we're all at the table and we have the best information possible, we can make that a reality. So,
Chris Abert, founder and director of the Indiana Recovery Alliance, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Wes.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
100 years ago, most money was in banks. So crooks like John Dillinger, Babyface Nelson, or Bonnie and Clyde went around robbing banks. People still rob banks, but they don't get much. Like the poor dumb slob down in Clearwater, Florida last month. He put on long pants, a long-sleeve shirt, gloves, and glasses, pulled pantyhose over his head, and robbed a bank. He jumped in his getaway car with the cash, and multiple dye packs exploded, filling the car with pink fog. He started throwing handfuls of pink money out the window, but he got so interested in doing that he crashed. The cops caught him easily. Even in Florida, he was the only one wearing pink from head to foot. Today, most money isn't in banks. It's in computers. And today's bank robbers are cyber criminals. They've traded in their Tommy guns for laptops and smartphones, and they're doing better than ever. Michael McGuire, a British criminology expert, recently released a 9-month study of cybercrime. He found that worldwide, cyber crooks are stealing more than $1.5 trillion every year. It's not a business, he said, it's a whole economy. And some people are getting very, very rich. The best, or the worst of them, make a couple of million. Average cyber thieves maybe 800,000 or 900,000, and even the bottom feeders can glom $40,000 or $50,000 every year. Those scary ransomware attacks only rake in a measly $1 billion annually. The sale of stolen credit cards and identities nets more than $160 billion. Selling counterfeit products and pharmaceutical drugs on the Internet rakes in more than $850 billion a year. And now they found a new way to come after you. You got a credit card? Not long ago, you probably got a new card with an integrated circuit chip embedded in it. Those are a lot harder for crooks to fake than the old magnetic stripe cards. It was easy to reprogram a mag stripe, but you need a very expensive factory to make chips. So those are completely safe, right? Wrong. Now the fraudsters are doing something called shimming. They insert a gadget into the card slot on gas pumps and ATM machines, which intercepts all the data, including your PIN number, and transmits it to them. You insert your credit card, and while you're making one purchase, the scammers are ringing up dozens. You insert your debit card, and while you're withdrawing a couple of $100, the thieves are grabbing all the rest. Here's how to protect yourself. If you insert your card and the slot seems kind of tight, doesn't go in easily, pull it out. Remember, it's always safer to use a credit card than a debit card, especially when you're traveling. Or you can eliminate all the risk from cybercriminals. Use cash and get it from a teller. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from the IU Health Foundation, where gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Francis Sheets, Jonah Chester, and Sarah Vaughn in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Jonah Chester.
Our engineer today, Jenna Jankowski. Our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Danny Graff, and Scott Schmadeke. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org.
Stay tuned for Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. Hereabouts is a new program on WFHB and is produced in partnership with the Asian Cultural Center on the campus of Indiana University, Bloomington. That's Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio, coming up next on WFHB.